Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
At this stage of the game, the vast majority of us know the name Laken Riley. It's a nursing student who was found dead on the campus of the University of Georgia with her skull disfigured. That was the reporting. I haven't seen photos, so I'm not quite sure what disfigured means, but I can do enough guesswork to know that maybe I don't want to see that photo. Maybe that's not what I need in my life. Laken Riley is dead because we don't have policies that actually protect the border. She was murdered by an illegal immigrant. This is what happened. Joe Biden's policies don't work. Joe Biden does not enforce the policies that do work. Neither does his Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas. The border is outrageously porous, and people are getting killed because of it. When Joe Biden addressed this in the State of the Union, Joe Biden tried to make a spin move. What Joe Biden said was, you want me to talk about this woman killed by an illegal? What about all of those killed by legals? And you're like, oh, what? I got to admit, when I first heard it, I wasn't quite sure what it was that I was hearing. What exactly was being said here? This idea that he was going to utilize this to say, what was this? Was this about guns? All these people killed by people in the country legally. Why won't you address that? What do you mean, why won't I address that? We're talking about illegal immigration. We're talking about people getting killed because you won't deal properly with the border. That's the subject. That's the everything. Why in the world would we discuss anything else? He brought this up. When he brings up Laken Riley, he doesn't say Laken Riley's name properly. He refers to her as Lincoln Riley. He gets her name wrong. The family of Laken Riley, they have stated, how dare you even discuss her? But if you're going to bring up her name, could you at least pronounce it properly? You big giant jerk. They're not wrong. They are not wrong at all or in any way. You're going to mention my daughter? Could you at least get her name right? To which Joe Biden couldn't. But in his conversation, of course, he said illegal. Laken Riley, who he called Lincoln Riley, killed by an illegal. This is what the political left has deemed an offense. Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. Find everything over at TonyKatz.com. Joe Biden then starts doing interviews where he's not asked about this dead woman. The political left, this is Jonathan Capehart asking the questions in MSNBC. He couldn't give a damn about a woman who's dead. No. You're at the State of the Union. You come across Marjorie Taylor Greene, and, oh, you made a big boo-boo, didn't you, Joe Biden?
I noticed the look of surprise on your face when you walked into the chamber and you saw Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. It was priceless. You feigned shock at seeing her. But during your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Lake and Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look, when I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that his, the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect. Look, they built the country. The reason our economy is growing. We have to control the border and more orderly flow, but I don't share his view at all.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
This woman is dead. I don't give a good holy damn what you called this son of a bitch. It means nothing! I don't like the idea of name-calling for the sake of it. I never have. I don't think it's valuable to conversation. I don't think it actually makes a good host. But he's got to apologize for calling this murderer illegal? That's the sin? Recognizing that someone in the country illegally is illegal? From White House spokesperson Olivia Dalton aboard Air Force One.
President Biden apologized for calling Lake and Riley's killer an illegal. Does he feel like he needs to apologize to illegal immigrants for calling them what they are, for using the term illegal?
Well, first of all, I want to be really clear about something. The president absolutely did not apologize. There was no apology anywhere in that conversation. He did not apologize.
Is that how you heard it? That Joe Biden didn't apologize? Is that how you heard it said? That the focus in that segment was not about this dead woman, but was about whether or not somebody was offended by the term illegal. That is certainly how it sounded. That is certainly how it came across. I would argue to say that somehow it came across in a different way or another way is just madness. The border is the biggest story in America. It hasn't changed. I was in Israel. We've discussed Israel. We've discussed the economy. We have discussed the threat of China, and we'll get into more of the conversation about TikTok because there's a fascinating story about Kevin O'Leary, and I would call this the Musk effect. But nothing is a bigger story than the border. Nothing at all. Let's go back to Pete Buttigieg, who I was just talking about earlier. This was the day after the State of the Union, and CNN wants to know, how do you feel about the use of the term illegal?
Are you comfortable with the use of the term illegal in this context?
Look, I think the president was responding to what was being hurled at him from the House floor and responding, as he characteristically does, with compassion to a tragic case that shouldn't be used as a political football. But I think more broadly, what he did when it came to immigration and the border was remind Congress and Americans that even if there isn't total agreement, even a lot of people who might not agree with our administration's approach, there was bipartisan consensus that most Americans would support and that conservative and Democratic members of Congress supported.
Yeah, but it didn't pass, so why not put forward something else? This is an amazing part about this legislation. Oh my gosh, Republicans wouldn't pass the bipartisan legislation. Yeah, so pass something else. Try something else, pass something else. You didn't get it done. Why is it that everything stops all of a sudden? This legislation wasn't great. I don't care if it was bipartisan. It wasn't great. Did you know that the Heritage Foundation was very interested in the idea of, when talking about healthcare, the idea of universal healthcare vis-a-vis something like Obamacare and forcing people to pay in? Until they looked at it and said, okay, let's talk about this, Wait a second. This doesn't make sense. Let's not do this. The reason you put ideas out into the public sphere. Out there into the public is to get feedback. Maybe hear something you haven't heard before. Maybe somebody else has an idea that you didn't have. And you realize, wait a second, this idea is absolutely terrible. Just terrible. I mean, why in the world could we, are we possibly thinking of this? That happens all the time, and rightfully so. Sometimes a bad idea is a bad idea. And we say so, and we say, all right, we're not going to give that thing a go. We're just gonna move right on from that and be done. So if the legislation doesn't pass, put something else out there. Try again. In this world, they don't try again. Just you'd rather scream about it. But remember, no one asked what Pete Buttigieg thought about this woman who was killed by an illegal immigrant. They didn't care. They care about the use of the term illegal. Man, you want to talk about not being focused on the right things. That's this administration. That's this president. The border is the biggest subject in America, and they don't even address it with the respect that it deserves, which is about respecting your life and the life of your children. Recognizing the people being killed at that border because of the lax policies at that border. No, they just want to make sure the murderer is treated very well and the proper respect is given. I'm surprised that no one got on Biden for not using the proper pronouns when talking about the illegal. I'm sorry, the undocumented. I'm sorry, whatever the word is they use today. This is where your president is focused. Progressives don't care that you get killed. They care that the killer is treated fairly. I'm Tony Katz. If you can get in on the DEI bandwagon, if you can figure out a way to get paid from this scam, I would do it immediately, if not sooner. As soon as you can, get this done because the money is sweet. Tony Katz today. What are you doing, kitten? 833-GOT-TONY. Call in. Love to talk to you. 833-468-8669. I'll even remind producer Jason to keep his eye on the phones. Happy to talk to you. Find everything I do over at TonyKatz.com. The University of Virginia, according to Zero Hedge, is spending $20 million on 235 DEI employees. Now, let's just stop for a moment. Did you just say 235 DEI employees? DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, or as we usually call it, bigotry. DEI is about hate. It's about teaching people to hate one another. It's about putting everything in a framing of oppressed and oppressor. Right? There are these, you're oppressed and there are these people oppressing you, and you see we have to do something about those oppressed people and those oppressors, and usually it's of course skin color, and the white person is the oppressor and the black person is the oppressed, and it doesn't matter if you're oppressed or not. If you're black, you're being oppressed, you don't even know it, right? That's why you always have to be on the lookout for it. That's called intersectionality, because look at all the ways you're being oppressed from all these different areas from which the oppression could occur. And if you're white, you don't even understand that you're a bigot. It's happening subconsciously. You're not even aware of it, but you're responsible for it. You see how that works? You're guilty whether you did anything or not. Doesn't matter how you live your life. Doesn't matter what you do within your life. You're always guilty because the color of your skin determines whether or not you're innocent or guilty. That used to be racist when we would say, oh, they're black, they must be guilty. But no, you see, that would be ridiculous because because you're not guilty because of your skin color. And that's the argument that we made. And now all of a sudden you're guilty because of your skin color. And they say, aha, you see, you're guilty. And you say, but wait a second, that doesn't make any sense. And then they say, you see, there's your white fragility. You can't even handle the fact that you're guilty, you disgusting bastard. Now give us money. Those are the reparations people. And it goes on and on and on, etc. Reparations does not just exist in the idea of some level of legislation. I would argue that reparations exist in the very concept of DEI. This idea that you need to have 235 employees to tell everybody what kind of bigot they are or what kind of bigotry they're experiencing. There's nothing worse than somebody who doesn't understand the bigotry that they're not experiencing, so you have to remind them about how they're experiencing the bigotry. University of Virginia has staffers getting paid, including the senior associate dean and global chief diversity officer, who is making $451,000 a year and with benefits is making $587,000. Now, is this the school paying it through the tuition? Or is this the taxpayer paying it? Because this describes the idea that it's the taxpayer paying it. The article by Adam Andrzejewski of Open the Books and that Substack says pay plus benefits, estimated taxpayer cost. The taxpayer pays it? How in the world does the taxpayer pay it? Well, that is something worth looking at. You get people who are offended when you refer to it as a scam. But of course it's a scam. Of course it's a grift. Black Lives Matter was always a grift. I said so from the beginning, and oh, did I take heat? I took heat for calling it a grift. Tony, why can't you say Black Lives Matter? Because I know who's running this organization, and these people are bigots. These people are grifters. These people are Marxists. I am in no way, shape, or form going to put myself on the side of Marxists. Latasha Brown is described here at MSNBC as a co-founder of Black Voters Matter. That's not Black Lives Matter. That's Black Voters Matter. How would I describe this? She took a look at the grift of Black Lives Matter and said, I can do this. And what do Black Voters Matter have to say?
You know, when we have been on the ground talking to voters, particularly young voters, they're very upset what is happening. It reminds me of what happened in the movement of South Africa of ending apartheid. What you young people really led that. They were very disturbed. It was one of the foreign policy issues that we saw college students and college age students get around. And we're seeing the same thing now. As we're talking to young people, they're very disturbed about what is happening in Gaza. And they want to see a ceasefire. And they've been very open about that. And so
Your group tries to get students to think of what's happening with Gaza, meaning the Hamas terrorist attack on Israel, and equate it to apartheid. But since there's no way to do that, you have to base your work on the idea that the voter you're trying to attract is a schmuck. You don't even bother with an education of students. Rather, you make radical statements that prove the Marxist bona fide. Thumbs up to you. DEI is a grift, and there are other grifts that surround it. $500,000 to be the senior associate dean and the global chief diversity officer? Count me in. By the way, as the article points out, the governor of Virginia makes $175,000 a year. The global chief diversity officer at the University of Virginia is making $587,000 a year. The money's good if you can get it. We should just stop allowing the money to be spent like this. This is Tony Katz today. The Oscars take place last night. And I don't know why John Cena was naked. No one asked me, because I would have said to him, don't be naked at the Oscars, which is, you know, more than anything, just practical advice. Tony Katz today, 833-GOT-TONY, 833-468-8669. That is the number, 833-GOT-TONY. To the extent that it got political, I think it was just, for the most part, the standard fare, right? Oppenheimer wins just about everything. Cillian Murphy, best actor. Robert Downey Jr., best supporting actor for Oppenheimer. What's her name? Oh, I can't picture her name, the woman who won best actress. Emily Stone? Is that it? Emily Stone? Emma Stone, sorry. Emma Stone wins best actress. Oppenheimer, film of the year. Christopher Nolan was the best director. You saw a lot of this coming. What you didn't see coming was director Jonathan Glazer. Jonathan Glazer directed a movie called The Zone of Interest. The Zone of Interest, international feature, is about the family of the commandant of Auschwitz living next door to the concentration camp. That is a weird topic. That is a weird, strange topic. So he wins. And he's up there with the producers. And he gives an acceptance speech. The film is called The Zone of Interest. He's British. Listen.
I'm going to read, I'm afraid. Thank you to the Academy for this honor and to our partners, A24 Film for Access and the Polish Film Institute, to the Auschwitz-Birkenau State Museum for their trust and guidance, to my producers, actors, collaborators. All our choices were made to reflect and confront us in the present, not to say look what they did then, rather look what we do now. Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October... Whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all are victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist? Alexandra Bistron Kaladziejczyk, the girl who glows in the film as she did in life, chose to. I dedicate this to her memory and her resistance. Thank you.
Now, it should be noted that while there were people out there, members of the Academy, actors, producers, etc., wearing pins calling for a ceasefire, nobody mentioned the fact that there are well over 100 hostages being held by Hamas in conditions you couldn't dream about. Lord only knows who's alive. No one talks about hostages. And I'm going to get more into this coming up in a little bit. But refute Jewishness. I'm sorry, I have no idea what in the world this means. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Should I be more bothered by the idea of refuting their Jewishness or by the idea of occupation? Gaza is occupied? Well, if you believe that, you're as dumb as your mother. Hamas won an election. Hamas has terrorized the people. If it's an open-air prison, Hamas is the warden. You notice how they stopped using the term open-air prison because they realized, wait a second, that doesn't work. Because pictures came out of Hamas and of Gaza and certain areas that were actually beautiful and built up. Because, you know, when the Israelis left in 2005, they left the infrastructure there. But instead of keeping the place beautiful, instead of building something, Hamas set about trying to destroy, because this is who Hamas is. This is what Hamas does. What occupation are you referring to? But refute their Jewishness, I swear to you, I thought about responding to it last night. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't know what this is. I don't know what this means. What possibly could you be discussing? Well, groups have come out all over the place that this is about dehumanizing Jews and really giving aid and comfort to those who want to destroy Jews. And maybe it could be said that way. What if it could be said differently? When one supplants their humanity for their ideology, when one were to replace their Judaism with their progressivism, or their Christianity with their progressivism, or their name it with their progressivism, reality fades away at that moment, because what matters is adherence to the ideology. Adherence to the ideology means invitations to the right parties. Adherence to the ideology means a keeping of the right friends and maybe the making of quote-unquote better friends. That's what it means. This is what happens time and again. These people give up rational thought for pseudo-intellectual ideological claptrap. The idea that you would make this film centered around the Holocaust and take a look at what's happening with Israel and Hamas post October 7th or pre October 7th and say there's an equivalence. Man, people are right when they're telling you to go to hell, man. That you're out of your head, gross. And we rational people, we understand this. This is an ugly thing to say. But when asked the question, or when you think about why somebody would say it, well, look at the people who applauded. The same people who applauded Will Smith after he slapped Chris Rock for winning Best Actor are now applauding the idea that Hamas is the one being harmed and Israel's an occupying force. They're the ones applauding the idea that Israel is just like the Nazis. Makes you start to realize that Hollywood is the problem. And you know who stood up? Not a single person. No one stood up and said, hey, be quiet. No one stood up and said Israel is worthwhile. No one stood up and said I'm a Zionist. No one even stood up and said, dude, that was weird. Right? Like that was just a weird thing to say, man. I don't know what you're refuting there. That is just plain old awkward. No one. Not a single person said, that's weird, man. Not one person said, I disagree. That's Hollywood, right? You want to know why people are disgusted with Hollywood? Look at the total lack of decency. These are the same people who knew that Harvey Weinstein was raping every girl in sight and said nothing because maybe he'll fund my movie. You give up your humanity for your ideology. And your ideology says, look the other way on all these things, but be sure to speak out about all these other things. Be sure to make statements about this, that, and the other, so you'll look good to these people who are all looking the other way while Harvey Weinstein is groping women and raping women in his hotel room or on top of a fern. Whatever it was he was doing. These are the people we're supposed to look up to and respect. These are the people who actually have the audacity to tell us that they are moral, that we should listen to them, that they are just, that they provide value. What value do they provide? What is it that they offer? This director, what does he offer? He doesn't speak for me. I don't get to speak for Jews, but this guy sure as hell doesn't speak for me. Refute your Jewishness. I swear to you, still, I don't know what it means. What I know is that if in Hollywood, run by the Jews, feel the air quotes, run by the Jews. By the way, I have never gotten an opportunity to run Hollywood. No one has ever come to me and said, Tony, how'd you like to run Hollywood? Control the weather, sure. I've been given that opportunity many times. And be in charge of the space lasers? My goodness. I actually run things on Tuesdays and alternating Fridays from 2 to 4 p.m. We take Friday nights off at Shabbat after all. But I've never been given a chance to run Hollywood. And not one Jew in that audience said, why don't you shut up, you moron? Not one. You realize how on top of it we are and how correct we are discussing the idea of humanity and ideology. You do a film about the Holocaust. You're trying to find the humanity. And yet for yourself, you gave it all away. Good God. I don't think I'll have Mr. Glazer directing my next project. I guess I'm going to have to do it myself. I'm Tony Katz. Called the Musk effect. This is the idea that there might be nothing stronger than being in the game. That when you take a look at Elon Musk buying Twitter, and everyone says, oh, how ridiculous. And oh, my gosh, he lost so much money. And oh, this and oh, that. They don't mention how much control Elon Musk has. Or really, maybe better said, how much control he gave the people. And how much respect there is for that. And how much value there is in that. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. Find everything going on over at TonyKatz.com. Well, now there's a push on to get TikTok sold out of Chinese hands. Stop letting China have TikTok and get it into the hands of Americans or somebody else. TikTok is serving up these algorithms that damage American kids. Chinese kids do not get what American kids get. You cannot trust the Chinese for the data that they steal. The Chinese Communist Party is, of course, who we're talking about when we say Chinese. Don't let them have any control over this. Don't let them have any part of this. Force the sale, at least when dealing with Americans. And so that subject is happening. Now, people who are TikTok people are upset about this. They've threatened to kill themselves. They threatened to kill members of Congress. Of course, there's money on the table, but the company could be purchased. And one of the people who wants to buy the company is Kevin O'Leary. Kevin O'Leary is Mr. Wonderful on Shark Tank. Now, those of us of a certain generation know that Mr. Wonderful is Paul Orndorff, but that's neither here nor there. What I'm proposing, he says, is purchasing these assets into a new American company. I'll guarantee the servers are on American soil. I'll guarantee you will close the Chinese back doors in the code. I guarantee it becomes safe for the users, the parents, small business, and large business. It'll be an American company. Now, I don't actually know how much money Kevin O'Leary has. I don't know what he is, worth. But what a thing to put out there. Yeah, I would buy this. You buy TikTok. Well, to own TikTok would be a tremendous amount of power. And to allow for openness, to allow for all sorts of conversations, to allow for a sharing of ideas and for preventing the Chinese from being involved. Yeah. There's a value in that. There is a strength in that. There is a there is something very Elon Musk about that. People look at Elon Musk buying X and they say, oh, what a terrible idea. Oh, that didn't work. Oh, how silly. My gosh, he took up so much of his own valuation. But, you know, it's also made him a hero to many. And I understand that because he allowed people to speak freely. You think Kevin O'Leary, who producer Jason looked it up, $400 million. He's got $400 million, which is not bad. That's a fair amount of coin. It's not as much money as Musk. But you look at that and you say, well, wait, we could do the same. That means that people believe there is a value in these kinds of purchases. Other people may see them as just big mistakes and not making any money and all that jazz. And, oh, you could do better if you did this and better if you did that and better if you did the other and better if you did your mother. Who knows what it is they think you do better on? But they see a value. Could be that these platforms are the new NFL teams, right? To show that you're really rich, you own a professional sports team. Well, what if you own the platform by which people speak and share? There's something happening here. The Muskification, the Musk effect, whatever you want to call it. I don't think O'Leary is having this conversation for nothing. Oh, he's going to need some partners. He's going to need some help. But he might be onto something. This is Tony Katz today.